Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell. And it's time for another exciting chapter in Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 12, Telleth of a Fight in the Dark. Penfeather was at the casement, had whipped open the lattice, and pinning the intruder by the throat, thrust a pistol into his face all in a moment. And then I recognized Godby the peddler. "Let be, Adam," I cried, springing forward. "Let be, here's a friend." Saying nothing, Penfeather thrust away the weapon and, gripping the little man in both hands and with prodigious strength, jerked him bodily in through the window, which done, he clapped to the lattice and, drawing the curtain, stood fronting Godby grim-lipped. "And now what?" says he softly. "Lord," gasped Godby, "Lord love me, but here's a welcome to a pal. Here's the second pistol I've had under my nose this night. Throttle me in a hayband else." "What do you seek?" "My pal, Martin, cordon to his word." "Do you know this fellow, Martin?" "Aye," I nodded, and told briefly how and where we had met. "Godby here Jenkins, am I, master?" said Godby. "And well beknown to Joel Bim, as keepeth this house, strangle me else, ask Joel. And if you're Master Penfeather, I've first this here for ye, and second a warning." And speaking, Godby drew a letter from the breast of his leathern jerkin. "A warning," says Penfeather, glancing at the superscription. "Against whom?" "A black dog as goes erect on two legs and calls himself Gregory Bragg."
"You mean Lady Brandon's under bailiff?"
"I do so. Well, he be no friend of yourn. And what's more, he's hand and fist with others as be no friend of yourn either. Cutthroat sailor men and black rogues every one."
"How do ye know him for sailor men?"
"By their speech, master. I was a mariner once, and moreover by a ranting hellfire chorus."
"Ah," says Penfeather, shooting a glance at me. "A chorus, was it?"
"Aye, master, concerning murder and what not."
"And the words running like this?
2 on a knife did part with life, and 3 a bullet took o, but 3 times 3 died plaguily, a wrigglin' on a hook o. Was that the way of it?"
"Smother me if it weren't," quoth Godby, staring.
"Sit down, Godby, and tell me how you chanced on this," says Adam, seating himself at the table.
"Well, master, I happened to lie snug hid neath a heap of straw. And for why, says you, says I to you, by reason of 2 lousy catch-poles as won't let poor Godby be. Now this straw chanced to be in my Lady Brandon's stables. And why there, says you, says I to you, because these lousy catch-poles being set on poor Godby by this black dog Gregory, and him my lady's man, my lady's stables, is the last place catch-poles would come a-seekin' Godby. Well, now, as I lie there, I fall asleep. Now, I'm a light sleeper, and presently I'm roused by the sound of your name, master."
"Mine," says Penfeather softly.
"Aye, I hear's black passage to Captain Penfeather, curse him," says a voice.
"Aye," says another, "by knife or bullet, or," and here he falls to singing of a knife and a bullet and a hook.
"Avast," says a third voice, "belay that, Abney, you'll be having all the lubbers about the place aboard of us."
"Why," says the man, "Abney, since you're with us, well and good, but don't forget, we was hard in his wake, aye, and ready to lay him aboard, long before you hove in sight, and damn all," says I.
"Someday, Abney, someday," says the other, "I shall cut out that tongue of yourn and watch you eat it, lad, eat it."
"Hist, here come Gregory at last. Easy all."
Now the moon was very bright, master, and looking out of my hay pile as the door opened, I spied this rogue Gregory.
"Did you see aught of the others?" questioned Adam.
"No, master, nor plain, for they kept to the dark, but I could see they was 4, and 1 a very big man."
"Hey, you got it, friend? Hey, you got it?" says the big rogue.
No, plague on't, says Gregory. Look how I will, I can find naught. Here's luck, says the big fellow. Bad luck, as I'm a soul. Where's he lie? Can't say, says Gregory. His messages go to the Conisbee Arms, but he aren't there, I know. The faithful friend, was it? Says the big fellow, a lion off Deptford Creek. Aye, the faithful friend, says Gregory, and then chancing to look outside, claps finger to lip and comes creeping into the shadow. Lie low, says he in a whisper. Here's my lady. And then, master, close outside comes my lady's voice calling, Gregory, Gregory. Answer, fool, whispers the big man, quick, or she'll be athwart our cable. Here, my lady, says Gregory, and steps out of the stable as she's about to step in. Gregory, says she in hesitating fashion, have you seen a stranger hereabouts tonight? Not a soul, my lady, says Gregory. A tall, wild man, she says, very ragged and with yellow hair. No, my lady, says Gregory. Here she gives a sigh. Why then, says she, bear you this letter to Master Penfeather at once. To the Conisbee Arms, my lady, says Gregory. No, says she, to the Peck o' Malt by Bedgebury Cross. And Gregory, should you see aught of the poor man that suffered lately in the pillory, say I would speak with him, and now saddle and begone with my letter. To Bedgebury, says Gregory, the Peck o' Malt, tonight, my lady. This moment, says she, mighty sharp. And Gregory, I hear tales of your hard dealing with some of the tenantry. Let me hear no more, or you quit my service. And away she goes, leaving Gregory staring after her, letter in hand. 'Twas she, says the big man in a whisper. I'd know her voice anywhere. Aye, 'twas she whipped it from my girdle. My luck, shipmates, our luck, but we'll find it if we have to pull the cursed house down, brick and brick. Godby, says Adam suddenly, leaning forward, did you get no glimpse of this man's face? Nary a one, master, and for why? The place was dark, and he wore a great flapped hat. Why, then, says Adam, pinching his chin, did you chance to see his hands? No whit, master, and for why? He wore a loose cloak about him. And what more did you hear? No more, master, and for why? Because, as luck would have it, a straw tickled my nose, and I sneezed loud as a demi-culverin. And there's poor Godby up and running for his life, and those murderous rogues after poor Godby. Howbeit, they durst not shoot, lest they should alarm the house. And I'm very light on my feet, and being small, and used to dodging catch-poles and the like vermin, I got safe away. Having done which, and bethinking me of my pal Martin, I made for the Peck o' Malt. Now, as luck would have it, Gregory overtakes me, as I had proposed he should, I being minded to get even with him for good and all. Down he gets from the saddle, and me by the collar, and claps a great snap haunts under my nose. So it was you rogue, was it? Says he. The same, says I, but who's that peeping over the hedge there? The fool turns to see. I twixt the pistol out of his grip, and have him very neatly trussed and gagged with my belt and my girdle, and so heaving him I the ditch, into the saddle, and here I am. Godby, says Penfeather, viewing him keen-eyed, I need men. Will you sail with us for the main? Does Martin sail? He does. Will ye along? Heartily, Captain, heartily. Are ye armed, Godby? I've got Gregory's dag here, says Godby, pulling out a long-barreled pistol. Joel shall find ye another to go with it, and ye know the sea. Aye, Captain, I sailed with Captain Middleton as a gunner, and will lay you a gun at any man from a murdering piece or minion to a great culverin. Good, says Penfeather, and summoned Joel Bim, who, beholding the peddler, stared, bellowed jovial a greeting, and at a nod from Penfeather departed with him arm in arm. Well, Martin, says Adam when the door had closed, and what do you make of this tale of sailor men? That they're the same rogues I fell out with, beyond doubt, Martin, and what more? That like enough they're on their road hither, beyond any peradventure, shipmate. Well, let 'em come, Martin, let 'em come. There's somewhat here I don't understand, and I mislike mystery. So let them come here in this little room, in light or dark, I ask no better. And you such a timid man, Adam. True, Martin, but there's occasion when a worm turneth. Here he took up the letter Godby had brought, and breaking the seal, read it through. Once with a glimmer of his grim smile, read it again and frowned, and frowning glanced across at me. Here's matter concerning you, Martin. Harkee. And he read this. To Master Adam Penfeather, should you chance upon the poor man that suffered lately in the pillory by no order or will of mine, you will, I charge you, do all you may to succor him in any matter soever. This letter I do write in much haste to instruct you that I propose to sail in the faithful friend, along with you and my good cousin Sir Rupert, in this quest for my father. Moreover, I will you should sail as speedily as soon as may be. As regardeth the poor young man aforementioned, if he be quite destitute, as I do think him, and will take no money, as I do judge most like, then, Master Adam, you shall offer to him such employ in my ship, the faithful friend, as he will accept. And this is my wish and command, Joan Brandon. He is tall and great and fierce, with yellow hair and cruel mouth, yet seemeth more cruel than he truly is. So there you are to a hair, Martin, and here's our enterprise brought to naught if she sail on this venture. Why, then she mustn't sail, says I. 'Tis her ship, Martin, and she's a Brandon. Then sail without her, and be taken before we're clear of the downs and strung up on execution dock for piracy. Why, then, if she goeth aboard, I don't. And wherefore not, Martin? I'll take no service with a Brandon. Ay, verily, there's your pride, Martin, which is cumbersome cargo. Call it what you will. I'll not sail. And your oath, comrade, sail along o' me, you must and shall. But having respect for your high stomach pride, you shall stow away in some hole or corner, and she never know you're aboard. Hereupon I scowled. But perceiving him so serene, albeit a little grim, I said no more, and he fell to pacing slowly back and forth, head bowed and hands locked behind him. I need you, Martin, says he at last. I need you even more than I thought. The one man I may trust to in a pinch. For Martin hears that I don't understand. So saying, he halted by the table, and presently, taking up the dagger, and with strange reluctance, fell to twisting it this way and that. Finally, he gave a sudden twist, and the smiling head of the silver woman, coming away, showed a hollow cavity running the length of the shaft, roomy and cunningly contrived. Slowly he fitted the head into place again, and laying the weapon down, shook his head. "Here's Bartlemy's dagger, true enough, Martin," says he, touching its keen point. "Here's what found Bartlemy's black heart, aye, and many another. Here's what went hurtling over cliff in Tressady's fist, and yet here it lies, which is great matter for wonder, Martin. And since 'tis here, why then, where is the vile rogue Tressady? Which is matter for painful speculation, Martin. Where?" "Snoring, likely enough," says I, "not so far hence or tramping hither." "If so, Martin, then death cannot touch him, though which is out of all reason. 'Tis more like the fall did not kill him, Adam. Had you but seen the place, shipmate, but if water won't drown him and steel won't harm him. Like you, he wears a chain shirt, Adam, that I do know. Moreover, the devil cherishes his own, I've heard." "Why, here's reason, Martin, plain reason, I grant, and yet, but 'tis late, you'll be for sleep. There's reason in that, too. Come, I'll show your bed." "Spare yourself, I want no bed," says I bitterly. "'Twere luxury wasted on the likes of me. My couch shall be the corner yonder." "Ah, prideful youth, 'tis sweet to be young, Martin," says Penfeather with his sudden whimsical half-smile, and clapping his hand on my shoulder. "Sleep where you will. That corner is as good as another. See, there stands my tuck. a Spanish blade of notable good temper. It hath been a true friend to me many a time ere now, and should be a trusty bedfellow. As for me, I'm for featherbed. And Martin, says he, pausing to pinch his chin and view me sideways, if aught should chance to me, at any time the chart and treasure will be yours. So good night, comrade, and sleep sound, for 'tis like we shall wake betimes. Saying which, he turned, slow and thoughtful, and went out, closing the door softly behind him. As for me, being very drowsy, I wrapped myself in my weather-worn cloak, blew out the candles, and, lying down in the corner, was presently fast asleep. Now, as I slept, I dreamed that Penfeather's long rapier, standing in the dark corner close by, was stealthily endeavoring to free itself from its leathern scabbard, with intent to skewer me to the floor as I lay, and striving thus to draw itself, made soft, strange noises and rustlings, insomuch that I presently woke, and staring motionless into the darkness above, knew that these sounds were real. Somewhere close by was a furtive whisper of sound that came and went, a soft drawn breath, a scraping of fingers on the paneling above me in the darkness. And in that moment also I became aware that the lattice yawned wide upon a square of glimmering blackness. Suddenly a sly creeping foot touched me unseen. And then, even as the owner of this foot tripped over me, came the roaring flash of a pistol hard by, followed immediately by another, and as I lay deafened and half-dazed, the floor quivered to the soft, vicious thud of leaping, swift, trampling feet, and on the air was a confused scuffling, mingled with an awful beast-like worrying sound. And now, though I was broad awake and tingling for action, I constrained myself to lie still, nothing stirring, for here, as I judged, was desperate knife-play. Indeed, more than once I heard the faint click of steel. And now rose shouts and cries and a tramp of feet on the stair without. Someone reeled staggering across the room, came a scrabbling at the open casement, and as I leapt up, the door burst open and Joel Bim appeared, flourishing a naked hanger, and with God be behind, bearing a lanthorn, whose flickering light showed Adam knife in hand where he leaned panting against the wall, a smear of blood across his pallid face, and with shirt and doublet torn in horrid fashion. "The window," he gasped. "Shutters! Where bullets?" I sprang forward, but Joel was before me, and crouching beneath the open lattice, swung the heavy shutters into position. But even as he did so, a bullet crashed through the stout oak. "Doors all fast, Joel?" "Aye, Cap'n, but who's here? Is it the preventative? And me with the cellars choke full." "My cock, is it the customs, Cap'n?" "Worse, Joel," says Penfeather, wiping sweat from him. "Art hurt, Adam?" I questioned, eyeing his wild figure. And now I saw that the thin steel chain was gone from his sinewy throat. "No, shipmate, but the dagger, look ye, 'tis clean disappeared, Martin." "And good riddance," quoth I. "Oh, but Adam, what is your chart?" "Gone along the dagger, has it?" "Tush, man," says he, sheathing his knife. "'Tis snug in that wallet of yours." "My wallet?" I cried, clapping hand on where it hung at my girdle. "Aye, shipmate, I slipped it there as I bid you good night. But Martin, oh, Martin, the dead is alive again. See how I'm all gashed with his hook." "Hook," quoth Joel, shooting great hairy head forward. "Did ye say a hook, Cap'n?" "Aye, Joel, trust that he's alive again." "God love us," gasped the giant, and sank into a chair. Please join me next week for another swashbuckling story on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.